The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. Hey listeners, how about those midweek games? From Man United's season going quite contrary to the drama at St Mary's to Suarez scary against the Canaries. We round up the news and then batten down the hatches ahead of this weekend's games. Everton travelling to the Emirates, Crystal Palace hosting Cardiff, and struggling Man United taking on struggling Newcastle. There's a little bit of France, Italy and Germany, some posts, a spot of reasoning, a look at Real against Sporting, that's right, the MLS final, and countdown to the big draw, worries over lack of preparation and allegations of corruption. Yup, it's us pulling out the name of our iPad winner. All that and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. My word, what a midweek of action it was. Bonkers, bonkers football. What a lot there is to talk about, and what a lot of people there are to do that talking. Simon Burnton, delighted to see you in your knitwear.
Thank you very much, yes. I'm the Jewish people, it's already been Hanukkah, so we've already got our Christmas knitwear. Our Jewish version of Christmas knitwear. This is my Hanukkah knitwear.
All right, good. Slightly
nonplussed
for that.
Start of the day.
Right. Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Hi, Ian. Nice to see you. Chirpy for once. Good stuff. Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Yes. You're looking like a kind of ski assassin type look, aren't you? Skin
quite
tight
a good
black.
Look.
Yeah, it is a good look. It is a good look. It is good. And Barry Glendon, you're also in black. Yeah, just painting a bit of a picture for you listeners here.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Super. Tell you what, you've all had exciting Wednesday. I think everyone had an exciting Wednesday night. Some more exciting than others. Barry, you were hobnobbing with Chris Waddle.
Yes.
Woof.
Yeah, what a treat. I like watching football with footballers. I don't get to do very often. And I was at BT Towers and he was a guest on the same show I was on. And it was great fun. Nice
Brilliant.
Fella.
Who were you hobnobbing with there, Simon?
Me? I was in a slightly less footballing context. I was at London's posh Vintners Hall at the Riesling Fellowship.
The Riesling Fellowship?
Yes, we were celebrating German wine in all its glory.
All right. And you were there because you...
I do a little wine blogging on the side.
Wine blogging?
Yeah, stellafella.com, listeners. Like that. That's where you need to go.
Cool.
Yes, so that's where I was. And then I raced back to enjoy a bumper highlight
A vintage,
session.
I would call it a vintage in this context.
Really?
Yeah.
They were genuinely highlights. There was very little that...
Dregs. There was very little dregs.
Yeah.
Just doing a bit of a wine.
It was still Cardiff.
Yeah, that's true. But the others were
real corker,
more corking.
You might
say. Oh, you Rafa! I oughta. Shut up. Anyway, super. Oh, great. Well, and Riesling?
Yes, some of it was really, really super. Super duper.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, you know the address, Riesling makers? Absolutely. Right, now, I tell you, today's show, it's part one, part two, part three, part four, all about Luis Suarez, a goal in each part, I think. Which was your favourite, Barry?
I haven't seen any of them.
No,
no.
You haven't seen his goals?
No, I have not seen Luis Suarez's goals. But I understand this is his third hat-trick against Norwich,
that
which means he now gets
matter.
To keep them.
But, we've just got to describe them. Simon, which one do you want to describe? Start with
the first.
But, yeah,
but
you do first.
What really entertained me was Brendan Rodgers, after speaking about Suarez, he was saying that Suarez gets a lot of space because of the way his team play. And that he said he's still got to be there to finish them off.
Mm, oh, yeah.
Which, look at them. He wasn't there to finish them off. He was, like, the first one. He was standing 45 yards from goal. That's not being there to finish it off. That's scoring a wonder strike.
Yeah. In fact, certainly the third one was entirely of his own making. The second
one
he finished off.
The third
off,
one was the highlight of the four.
Do that first one. What happened in the first one, Barry? Listen up.
So the first one was a ruddy goal kick that was kind of landed maybe 10 yards into Liverpool's half, was headed back, bounced once, Suarez turned and volleyed it back over.
How far out was he at that point? 35 yards?
I'd say it was over 40. I think it was in the 40s, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Woof. And then, so everyone's just about got their breath back after that. And boom, there comes the set. Who put the ball in for him? It's Coutinho's corner, he's got his back to goal, and he kind of hook volleys it in.
He somehow found enough room to get away from the marker, but the ball was up somewhere near his shoulder. It's in a really awkward position, and then this sort of balletic stretch of the toe, and suddenly it's in the back of the net.
Pow. Mm. Rafa, goal number three. You were watching the German Cup, weren't you?
Three was the one where he does the sombrero of Leroy Fer.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so goal number three, he flicks it over the shoulder of another player and then latches onto it, sort of cutting in from the left on his right foot, and then unleashes a wonderful half volley.
Wow, it was so good. Even he couldn't believe it. He could not believe it.
Number four, Jim?
Number four was a free kick.
Boring.
No, I mean, he brilliantly done. He lashed it into the top corner. It was a brilliant free kick, yeah. So, Suarez, just an astonishing performance. Is he better without Sturridge? Is there anything to do with that, or is it just one of those things? Is he better when facing Norwich? What's the story here?
I think as soon as that first ball went in, he felt this is going to be my night.
Right.
I mean, idea to shoot from that position in the first place, I don't know what kind of footballer you have to be to think about, oh, you know, I'm going to have a shot here from 45 yards or 40 yards.
Mm.
And once it went in, they backed off of him as well. I think the third goal, there was a lot of trepidation in the defence. They backed off, they didn't want to get too close, and then he had actually quite a lot of space to dispatch that shot.
All right. So good, the fear is that Liverpool fans might not get to enjoy him for too much longer.
Yes, if anyone can meet what I'd imagine is an ever-increasing asking price. And we certainly know it's more than £40 million and £1, because that one's been tested. It's probably going to be more than £40 million and £2 as well.
Mm.
But if someone has got £60, £65 million sloshing around in their bank account, it might be a very good time to pounce.
No, certainly. Certainly might. For Liverpool, next up it's a home game with West Ham, who managed to concede to Crystal Palace. So Lord knows what's going to happen to them when they face the incredible Luis Suarez. While Norwich should take on West Brom. We'll talk more about that game later on, as it's part of the whole kind of relegation cluster. But absolutely extraordinary. Any other thoughts about Suarez before we move on?
I mean, just that it's astonishing that he is top scorer in the Premier League, having missed a big chunk of at the start of it, by the first weekend of December, top scorer, scoring more goals than he's played games. I mean, he's had an incredible impact this year.
He certainly has.
I think also it puts pay to this idea that whenever a player wants away, then you have to immediately sell him, because it would be horrible to keep him against his wishes. I think that one's buried.
Very good. Now, also on fire, a fire hazard, if you will, on Wednesday night was Eden Hazard. Absolutely amazing in the game against Sunderland there, Barry. I bet you were across this one.
Yeah, it was another sensational sort of one-man show, and Mourinho singled him out for praise after the game. Strangely, praise that also was quite derogatory, or sort of backhanded compliments, in that he criticised stuff he's done in other games to praise him for what he was doing in this. As a Sunderland fan, I think I'm delusional at this stage, but again, it's a defeat, another defeat, which I think Sunderland fans can take heart from.
Right.
Because you scored three goals.
Well, you actually scored four, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true.
One of them for Chelsea, but... Yeah. And John O'Shea.
Phil Bardsley, another own goal, and another goal for Sunderland, so to cancel it out. But Sunderland have Spurs at the weekend. Mm. I wouldn't be confident of getting anything from that, but after that they've a run...
You're at home to Spurs, though, no?
Yeah. After that they've a run of fixtures that are eminently winnable.
Mm. All right, and Chelsea are at Stoke, which they might equally regard as eminently winnable, but I don't know, Sunderland's home form, spirited performance in this, victories previously over Man City and Newcastle,
lost two games, one when they were down to nine men for an entire half, and another after a horribly unjust sending off of Wes Brown, so they're doing okay, but they are bottom of the table, and in really, really need lots of points very quickly.
Right.
It was a corking own goal from Bardsley. It was one of those where the cross was coming over quickly. But he had no need to go anywhere near it. There was no forward just perched on his shoulder waiting to pounce if he let it through. So, red faces there, at least for the 2 minutes it took for him to run up the other end and not one in for his own team.
That Sunderland at the bottom. At the top, it is Arsenal. You were there, Ian, at the Emirates.
I was, yeah. I spent the hour before the game making snide, nasty jokes about Nicholas Bentner's place in the starting lineup, and he spent 93 seconds before proving me wrong.
Right.
By scoring.
That's the Macintosh effect, isn't it?
It really is. I need to monetize this or in some way convert this power to good.
Right. All right, well, that's pretty. Yeah, it's quite a positive thing you've done already.
Yeah, something to plan over the Christmas holidays, all right. I think.
What was that absolute belter you had? Was it last week? You predicted something on...
That was Chelsea in Basel when I said, Basel have had the better of this game, but Chelsea are on top now, and it's only a matter of time before they score. And 2 minutes later, Basel scored. And right. Now I can't go to Southwest London.
There you go.
Silver lining.
Yeah. Now, basically, am I right? So Wenger thinks, I've got a tough run of games coming up, and he does. He's got Everton, and then Napoli, Man City, and then Chelsea probably straight after that, or maybe there's another midweek game, but it's a tough run of games.
Yeah.
So he rested five players and thought, how I can get by, and boy, he could.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the problem has been Olivier Giroud, who's played every league game, started every league game for Arsenal now. And if he goes, it's Nicholas Bentner or Theo Walcott or a Sam Allardyce, like, let's just not play with a striker.
When does Podolski kind of come back into the picture?
I'm not entirely sure, but no time soon, as far as
really?
I'm aware.
Really? Okay.
There's certainly been no encouraging...
He's come back into training after this game.
Was he?
Yeah.
But he'll still need about 3-4 weeks after that, won't he?
There is
that concern. But Bentner, I mean, it wasn't, you know, a grandstanding performance, the kind of which it's going to earn him a new contract. But he was very good. He worked harder than certainly he did against Chelsea. There were lots of nice touches there. There were a handful of appalling touches as well. But that's only fair for a player who's not played regularly for a while.
What kind of reception did he get from the fans when he came out?
I know a lot of Arsenal fans were quite dubious about the whole thing, and the first thing he did was jump for a header and miss the ball by a clear 3 or 4 foot. Mm. But scoring a goal after 93 seconds is the kind of thing that's going to win people over quite quickly. And after that, they were fully behind him. There were cries of shoot every time he got the ball. And he got a standing ovation.
It was shoot, they were saying, was it?
I think so. Maybe I should have clarified that.
He scores when he wants. Scores when he wants.
Yeah, standing ovation when he came off. First goal in 1,007 days, I believe.
Not the first time his substitution's been greeted with applause, I'm sure. But anyway, as I say, it is a tough run of games. And it starts this weekend with Everton, who are, of course, fresh from that extraordinary victory at Old Trafford. I say extraordinary. Barry, was it an extraordinary victory?
No. I mean, we said on Monday that there was a very good chance they'd get a result. I don't think anyone would consider this a huge shock, apart from maybe the bookmakers, because Everton were a decent price to win the game.
And yet, Ryan Giggs was 18 the last time Everton won at Old Trafford.
Well, yeah, it's the first win in 46 league attempts for Everton to win at Old Trafford or the Emirates or Stamford Bridge or Anfield. So Moyes has finally managed to help them get that elusive win.
Right. Daniel Taylor posting, it's early in the Moyes era, but it comes down to this. Everton have improved without him. Man United have deteriorated with him. Is that fair? I mean, they're now 12 points off the top and indeed 5 points from the top four, which is a real concern. But
And 12 points off relegation.
Ha! Yeah.
It is fair. I think it is fair. You have to wonder how much of the deterioration is actually down to him and how much is down to them just being very negligent, bordering on incompetent in the transfer market. And when everybody else brings in decent players, you don't. You only buy Marouane Fellaini, who is not the player you need, then you will suffer. How much he had a hand in that, I'm not sure, but he certainly didn't cover himself in glory. And I think as a coach, I wouldn't be so overly critical of him. I think he's trying to marry his own ideas, which obviously at Everton worked and were very different, to the needs of Man United. And at the moment, it's a sort of an uneasy schism, I think, in the way things work there.
I feel a bit sorry for him, Moyes. He's a patsy, really, isn't he? And the following Alex Ferguson was the greatest poison chalice in the history of British football, probably. The Manchester United's last two titles were ultimate confirmation of Ferguson's unrivaled genius. And the job of coming in after him was, as difficult as jobs could possibly get. And then you add to that the cock-up of the summer transfer window. It's like a triangulation of fire. It's like a the grassy knoll and the book depository. And Moyes is...
The Lee Harvey Oswald. I get where you're heading.
Moyes is doomed to failure, I fear.
Right, doomed to failure.
Like, it's almost as if it was preordained as such.
Right, okay.
I don't think anyone wanted him to fail. I don't think the desire was for him to fail, just that it was a very, very, very hard task. It's harder task.
Right.
Task
certainly looked as though there was something preordained about this game, the way that the ball would not go in. Ian, the other day you were talking about putting cling film, quite an effective procedure, this, defensively speaking, across a goal. And it was almost like Everton had done that. The number of United chances.
Yeah, well, I can only speak on what I saw on Match of the Day, but it certainly looked like United were dominating them for an extended period right before Everton scored. Mm. Almost as if I'd said something on Twitter along the lines of Manchester United have got this one in the bag now. I'm like everyone else around the table. I feel very sorry for Moyes, but there's no getting away from it. This season is an unpolishable turd. It's fallen well below expectations. Mm. And I do feel really sorry for him. I even feel sorry for him on the awfulness of that transfer window, because as someone who worked in Merseyside for so long, he will have, you know, learned the Graham Souness lesson of coming in and changing a team too quickly. And I think there was obviously a conscious effort not to go in and smash a team of champions to pieces just to quickly rebuild them in his own image. But there's no way of getting around it. That was a massive, massive error of judgment. This team, in normal circumstances, probably needs 2-3 transfer windows for the Moyes to bring in the players to get them playing the way that he wants. But we all know around this table that modern football doesn't work like that.
We certainly do, don't we? You probably know that as well, listener.
It might work at Manchester United, but we don't actually... People assume Moyes is going to be given time, and we don't know that because the current owners at Manchester United have never worked with a failing manager before, so they may not give him time at all.
Very possible.
And you look at the squad, there are just so many players there who aren't good enough to play for Manchester United, in my opinion. I don't think Cleverley's not good enough. I think, well, Giggs is getting too old and he will retire soon. Fellaini thus far hasn't been good enough. Valencia I don't think is good enough anymore. Nani, Kagawa hasn't shone yet and possibly may not do at this stage.
Kagawa, is he off in January? Will he return to the Bundesliga, Rafa? No?
No.
Oh, okay. On the immediate future, they're at home to Newcastle. Now, there's no Wayne Rooney. He's now suspended for this game. And Robin van Persie hasn't been in for how many games now? 3, 4? Originally, when he didn't turn up for the Netherlands game, we all assumed that's the classic Man United thing of, oh, I'm afraid he's injured. But between this niggling toe and groin thing, is there a more serious issue? Are we back to his long absences of Arsenal days?
Well, David Moyes said it wasn't serious and he would be back in a few games. This was before the Everton game. Whether he'll make it for Newcastle, I'm not sure. But, I mean, we knew all along, and we knew that last season and possibly the season before, that United were, to an extent, carried by Rooney and last year by Van Persie. You take them out and they are a little bit pedestrian. They still have decent enough firepower. They should be higher than, what is it, eighth or ninth in the table. But you don't look at a team and necessarily think top four 100%. They'll struggle to get into the top four. And I think that might be the crunch. Might be the clincher. Because I think they'll forgive Moyes a transitional phase, as it were, with a semi-decent attempt in the Champions League. Perhaps getting far in one of the two cups and then just squeezing into the top four will be enough, will be seen as almost as a success. I don't think the expectations are much higher for him. Mm. But if they don't qualify for the Champions League, I think that would be a huge problem.
I still think it's more likely that they'll finish in the top four than they won't finish in the top four. With 24 games left and they are still Manchester United with players who won the title last season. But there are other absences that are killing them as well. They picked up 2 points in the last three games. And who wasn't there for the last three games? Michael Carrick.
Ah, yes.
The divisive Michael Carrick, who I believe is a big miss for them. Because without him, they seem almost scared of retaining the ball in the middle of the pitch.
Right. So now you saying that, does that mean he will come back immediately or that he won't be any good? I'm confused. Right.
A brace of own goals in his next game.
Right.
If they didn't qualify for the Champions League next season. It would be interesting to see what the repercussions would be with regard to the amount of debt the Glazers have loaded onto the club. So it's a problem that could snowball very quickly.
Well, it's very, very true. Well, there you go. Newcastle coming up there, of course, fresh from just seeing their own unbeaten run come to an end. They won four in a row. They went Swansea. Swansea got a much-needed win. 3-0 there. It was 3-0, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Newcastle. John Joe Shelvey. Shelvey coming round the mountain when she comes. I presume that's what they sing for John Joe, is it?
No, they sing Harry Potter's Coming for You. Because he looks like Voldemort.
Voldemort, yeah.
There's a good YouTube clip of that, actually. But West Ham fans singing at him while he's warming up on the touchline, and he looks around and has a little laugh and gives them a surreptitious round of applause. Newcastle were kind of hard done by in that game, it could be argued. I mean, the scoreline suggests they were whipped, but they should definitely have had one penalty, could possibly have had another, and Mr. Shelvey should have been sent off for sticking the head on a Newcastle player whose name escapes me now, Debussy. And he didn't make contact with him, but he definitely did address him, let's say.
Right.
And he should have walked for that and scored after that had happened.
All right. Well, that's the big game coming up then for Man United this weekend against Newcastle. That's it for part one. Coming up in a second or two, we're going to be looking at things down at the bottom, in particular Crystal Palace's stirring victory on Tuesday over West Ham. Part two. We promised you on Monday that today we'd be picking out the winner of our Football Manager 2014 iPad competition. We're going to do the draw for that in just a second. First, though, here's our resident quizmeister, John Ashdown, to give us the answer to that brutal question that we posed you.
We ask you to name the four Englishmen who have taken charge of sides in the group stages of the Champions League. We were very specific in the wording of the question. We said, taken charge of, not managed. The names we were looking for were Ray Harford with Blackburn Rovers, Sir Bobby Robson with Newcastle, Harry Redknapp with Spurs, and here's the clincher, Phil Thompson, who took charge of Liverpool while Gerard Houllier was ill. Now, two names many of you thought were correct were Bruce Rioch and Stuart Baxter. Rioch was manager at Danish side Aalborg when they were in a group with Man United, Celtic and Villarreal in the 2008 Champions League. Yes, he was born in England, but he represented Scotland 24 times as a player. And Stuart Baxter, who managed Sweden's AIK against Barcelona, Arsenal and Fiorentina in the Champions League back in 1999, may have been born in Birmingham, but grew up in Scotland. And to quote him in an interview he did with The Guardian in 2009, "If I'm mentioned for a job in Scotland, they call me a Scot. If I'm mentioned for a job in England, they call me an Englishman. I call myself a European." So there, he doesn't count. Anyway, that's our story and we're sticking to it.
Right, well, the good news is we had over 4,000 entries. The slightly less good news is only 36 of them were correct.
Simon, it's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed on behalf of...
That's less than 1%.
And we're attracting the wrong kind of listener, that's all I can say. We need to get ourselves up on that Mensa homepage.
Right. That's an interesting point. What do we have to do to get a better class of listener?
I'm actually quietly pleased that our listenership seems to be quite thick.
Yeah, who would have thought
that? It's heartwarmingly reassuring.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, we've put all the names into our elaborate randomizer device. You've got the paper bag there. Yeah, good. And Barry, if you would like to draw a winner and give it to me.
Okay.
Yep.
This is far less complex than tomorrow's World Cup draw.
Yeah.
Right, I have in my hand a piece of paper.
Hot X.
All right. Okay, let's have a look. And the winner is Adam Stinson of Essex. Yes, indeed. And we'll be in touch by email to arrange delivery. Congratulations to you. And once again, a big thank you to our friends at Football Manager Towers for providing an iPad. Football Manager, eh, Ian? Yeah. Cautionary word for anyone out there who's tempted?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fabulous game and an incredible work of technological accomplishment. Right. But if you have a partner or a job or indeed any kind of life, right, just don't play it. Just don't even go near it. Just don't do it.
Right. There you go. So I've got a quiz question. I wonder if anyone can tell me this. Which club have not finished their season in the top six of whatever division in the Football League, but not finished a season, not enjoyed a top six finish since 1972. Which club?
Is it Rochdale? Oh, no, Rochdale actually got promoted recently, didn't they?
Well,
that ruins that one.
I think I'm going to have to leave this one with you because it's a toughie. It is a toughie. So remember, listeners, that it's an English Football League team and they have not finished in the top six since, how many years is that now? 40 years. 40 years. My word. We'll come back to you on that one, eh? Right, it's lots of things going on down the bottom. And Tuesday night, there was drama at Selhurst Park. Anyone see this game? Because I certainly did. Crystal Palace against West Ham. Crystal Palace, unbelievably bad in the first half. I would say the worst Premier League team I've seen all season in the first half. They were awful.
Really happy that they singled out that game from the fixture list to put it on Tuesday.
It was a great game, was Raffert. Yeah, it was really, really... It was clearly, there was a desperation all over it, but there was something quite stirring about it, and Tony Pulis doing his touchline jog in his tracksuit and all this. And then at half-time, the Pulis effect, and West Ham, who I think had been suckered into a false sense of security by the abject nature of Palace in the first half, then took their foot off the gas, and boom, Palace scored. And who scored for them? In this week of weeks, it could only be...
Marouane Chamakh.
The man we all tore a new one here last week.
Did we do that?
We did. Mm. We criticised his playing ability, his bravery, his parentage.
We called him cowardly, didn't
we? Yeah, there was a whole world of that.
Who questioned his parentage?
I think we all did on some level.
I didn't do that.
Listen, I wasn't here.
Neither was I.
Was there any part of discussion of his hair care regime?
Yeah, that's something...
Unbelievably, we let him off over. That. Yeah.
So anyway, so he gets the only goal of the game. And West Ham, to be fair, were a bit unlucky. There were two goals disallowed. One, rightly probably for offside on Crystal Palace. But West Ham had a perfectly good equaliser when... Joey O'Brien. And there's a bit of shirt tugging. And they're both at it. But the linesman only sees O'Brien. So the goal was chalked off. But anyway, we're amazing. It doesn't help them that much. They're still in penultimate place, but it does narrow things up, but remarkably, because you've got Sunderland bottom of the pile on 8 points, then Fulham and Crystal Palace on 10, and then West Ham only 3 points higher up now after the midweek round, with Stoke, Cardiff and Norwich 4 points clear of the bottom three, and West Brom are not that far away either. They're on 15. Fulham, who were the team who looked most in danger almost because they were the ones whose heads have really dropped, they looked a bit more spirited against Spurs.
They did. Spurs won, but they continue to be bizarrely over-reliant on penalties and long-range goals. So they won with a 25-30-yard strike from Vlad Kirikesh and then a, 22-yard-odd strike from Holtby.
Mm.
Two decent goals, but unless someone scores from outside the penalty area, they're not scoring at all. And it was a much improved performance by Fulham. Berbatov was back in the team and sprightly.
Right.
And there's cause for optimism for them.
All right. Where's Berbatov going to go and how much difference will that make to Fulham?
Well, he's been linked with a move to Trabzonspor in Turkey.
Right.
Their president, whether he's spoofing or not, has said, or is reported to have said, that they've made inquiries and want to bring him, and apparently Berbatov would like to go.
The agent's quotes, yesterday there were quotes from Berbatov's agent saying that he wanted to go, but that his priority was to remain in England.
Right.
Trabzonspor.
I would take I want to go from Berbatov with a large pinch of salt. You remember his move to Fulham occurred with him having flown to Munich in order to catch a flight to Florence, but then halfway through deciding he was actually going to go to Juventus, and then actually saying, no, you know what, I'll fly back to London and join Fulham instead.
He will go, but only at his own pace.
Right. That's fair.
It might take a while.
He doesn't kind of strike you as the kind of player who would have the stomach for a relegation battle. He'd rather be, you know, flaked out in a chaise longue.
Hmm.
Smoking Gitanes and reading Voltaire.
Right. It's a lovely image. Lovely image. But this weekend he's going to be very much... So where are Fulham going to be? Fulham are going to be playing Villa. Aston Villa, who won at Southampton. That was a big game.
Yeah, and Southampton shipped three goals, which is unusual. And Villa had dropped Benteke.
Yeah.
And they had his decline has been quite remarkable. He's slump in form.
Aston Villa only had something like 24% of possession.
Really?
And yet scored three goals.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, leading to Paul Lambert making some derogatory comments about the importance of statistics and analytics in football.
Right.
Which are always entertaining.
For Southampton, that's now three defeats in a row. Man City will be visiting Saints this weekend. They just got an away win, so have some of that.
And it was the site of... they went to Southampton last year, Manchester City, and played abominably badly in pretty much the low point of the Mancini era. Isn't that right?
Was it 3-1? I'm thinking 3-1 to Saints.
And there was a Gareth Barry own goal
was there?
Scenario. Anyway, they
Jacob played, Steinberg would be able to remember everything about it.
They played absolutely abominably. So they all want to exorcise those ghosts. Southampton, well, no one could score against them until they did, and now they can't stop.
All right.
So, yeah.
Interesting. And also, then you had Cardiff and Stoke had a 0-0 draw, and West Brom Norwich is a game coming up this weekend. A big game, actually, for Norwich.
Well, it's kind of tricky to just discuss, you know. Can't watch 8 games overnight in time for pod, unfortunately. So, never really that.
Nope. Yep.
Yeah, there, exactly.
But it is a big game for Norwich, that one at West Brom.
Well, every game is a big game for Norwich.
Certainly is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Every game is a cup final.
But Crystal Palace Cardiff is quite an interesting game.
It's a real six-pointer.
Right, there you go. Crystal Palace Cardiff, that's a big game.
Just because they...
That's a great point. They've just won.
Palace are a poor team. Mm. I mean, they're a very poor team in this division, I think. But they keep on getting results in the key games. They beat Sunderland at home. They won away at Hull. They beat West Ham at home. And they can play as awfully as they like in the vast majority of their fixtures. If they keep winning all of these key games against their relegation rivals, they might just get away with it.
Wow. Yeah. Quite extraordinary. So, hang on in there until January. That seems to be the message in the meantime. As long as they're in touch when the transfer window comes around.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, time for a post or two. And you know, something we were going to do on Monday, we just ran out of time. Clearly, we've got nothing but time today. So let's hear about crazy injuries that have happened to footballers. King of liaisons. Actually, you know, I think it was El Popo who started all this off by saying Darius Vassell drilling through his toenail, attempting to relieve pressure on a swollen toe. How about that? Apparently so. Apparently drilled, quite literally used an electric drill on his toenail.
Like a medieval doctor.
Yeah.
Without the electricity, obviously. Mm.
Well, yeah.
Surely he'd have a leech on his toe.
Well, yeah, very releasing the humours.
Anyway, so there was a rush of these on, or whatever, these Fantana 275. Yari Litmanen once missed a couple of months while at Malmo after somebody opened a bottle of Coke in the dressing room and the top went straight into his eye. Remarkable.
Not a Coke, I think it was a cork.
Oh, it was a cork. Right, okay. And then here's Uncle Fester saying, who was the guy who got out of his car while it was in gear and ran over himself? Ignatius J. Riley, nice reference, says it was Ever Banega. Loads of references here from Ignatius J. Riley. He's got loads of other ones there. But bring some games else. Simon, who have you got on the crazy football injuries?
I'm just speaking off the top of my head, the classic one that's always wheeled out, I think, is Darren Bernard when he was at Barnsley and slipped in the kitchen on a puddle of his new puppy's wee and ruled himself out. I mean, that was long term. Also, Sheik Brody, who was a goalkeeper back in the 60s with Brentford, he sustained a career-ending dog collision injury.
Oh, yeah.
A dog ran on the pitch, I think, and this was... Sheik Brody had quite an interesting career. Previously, he had discovered a World War II hand grenade
what
on
was
a pitch
his name?
Once. Sheik.
All right, is it Sheikdog?
No, Sheik Brody. But a dog ran on the pitch and he tried to collect it. It was running at full pelt. And I think it did his knee and he never played professional football again.
Wow. Not so much dogged by injury as injury by dog.
Well, indeed.
Yeah.
Another old school one, legendary Manchester United goalkeeper Alex Stepney, who, while castigating his own defenders, dislocated his jaw. He was shouting at them so much.
You're joking. It's
brilliant.
What? Not so much.
not so much for Alex.
Right,
but,
okay.
The goalkeeper Richard Wright famously fell out of his attic and did himself a mischief once. And I also was at a game, I think it was at Stamford Bridge, where I saw him... during the warm-up, injure his ankle by tripping over a sign that said, please keep off the grass. And yeah. I've heard an apocryphal tale, which you know may not be true, of one player who was being pleasured by a lady in his car in the training ground car park. And at the moment of climax, his knee flexed and he did an injury to ligaments or tendons there because he was in the confined space of his... passenger seat or wherever.
Raphael's nodding knowingly.
Well, I've got a few, actually, because I researched them very diligently.
Ah, there you go.
Producer Ben prodded me gently during the week. And I think my favourite one is Mario Gomez hurting his knee. And then when the medic came on and said, "You're out, you've ruptured something," he got so angry, he bumped his fist on the on the medic suitcase and then broke a couple of bones in his wrist.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Good to get it out of the way at the same time. No? I think he was out injured anyway.
In the 1930 World Cup, I think, USA were playing, and there was an injury, their team doctor ran on the pitch, accidentally dropped a bottle of chloroform, and knocked himself out.
No.
That's true, that really happened.
It did happen, it was 1950 World Cup.
It was 1950, I just turned the years out.
I've had Brian Glanville's History of the World Cup on in the car.
Oh, nice.
It's very good, read by Bob Wilson. Highly recommended.
Okay.
There's also this, I think the most famous one is probably the Canizares one, dropping a bottle of perfume and then stepping on it.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised, Barry, you don't remember the Robbie Keane one. I think he was trying to get to the remote control with his foot and on from a sofa, and then ruptured a couple of ligaments in his leg.
I think
Rio Ferdinand has also sustained a remote control related knee injury.
Right. Yeah. I tell you what, there's a long list. Shall I just read you out some more? Here's some from Ignatius J. Riley, who says, honourable mention to David Batty, who was injured by his two-year-old daughter on a tricycle. Ivano Bonetti had his cheekbone fractured by that plate of chicken wings. Paolo Giorgio, this is horrible, ripped his finger off.
This is the classic one, really.
Wedding ring got caught in the wire fence. Oh.
And he still got a yellow card.
No.
For climbing up the fence.
No.
Yeah.
And, Svein Grøndahlen was assaulted by a moose whilst out jogging. Top one there. Producer Ben contributes Alan Wright, who put his knee out while stretching to reach the accelerator of his new Ferrari. It was very short, Alan Wright.
Yeah.
Michael Stensgaard, who was forced to retire after suffering an acute injury to his shoulder while attempting to fold down an ironing board, which, let's be frank, is not easy. And, Milan Rapajic. Spalato, or however you pronounce that these days, missed several weeks after jabbing his boarding pass into his eye at the airport. I think we had somebody mention that, but as a passport the other day.
God.
Yeah.
My favourite that I've witnessed at football matches.
Ah.
In a match between West Ham and Watford several years ago, Micah Hyde went in hard, which he didn't do very often, and into a challenge with Stuart Pearce, who was playing for West Ham at the time. Pierce received treatment for a while, and then, as is his style, I mean, he was determined to run it off. He was a bit of a hard man, was Piercy. Anyway, so he tried to run it off, failed. He'd broken his leg.
No.
You don't run that kind of stuff off.
No.
There was also a good one at Vicarage Road where Pierre Issa, the South African defender, who was currently collecting lots of money for very poor performances, he kind of fell over in an ungainly way in the corner of the pitch, and he needed to be stretchered off. And as they were carrying the stretcher around the pitch, one of the stretcher bearers fell down. And Issa was dumped unceremoniously face down onto the pitch.
Ah, bless. Okay, one final one. Mark Pohm, the Estonian keeper, got concussed and injured his genitals playing for Derby County in a 2000 friendly against an Iron Maiden 11 in his native Estonia.
In the class of 92, which you've now seen, there's a story of how Peter Schmeichel sustained a burnt todger when Nicky Butt held a recently boiled kettle against it.
Yes. Anyway, now, Simon, you were just speaking about Watford. What's going on in the Championship? How about that for a segue, by the way?
Very good. Very good. The first interesting thing that happened in the Championship, there was a full fixture list, pretty full fixture list. There were a couple of games on Wednesday night. Tuesday is when most of the games were played. And Sky Sports News had a kind of rolling reporting night, like they do on Soccer Saturday.
Mm, yeah.
But they were showing all the goals live as they went in, which was a novelty, I think.
Or just after they'd gone in.
So they'd cut to the guy in the stadium, and the guy in the stadium who had just seen a goal live once would try to remember what happened in this goal. Meanwhile, while he was speaking, they would show you what actually happened.
And how much did the two things marry up?
Well, they occasionally diverged quite remarkably. I just thought like they need to change the way they report on the matches they're at, or they like that novelty is going to take some getting used to.
Yeah.
They need to stop describing how the goals actually went in and just only talk about the weather or something and let's watch the goals.
Yeah, that sounds fair. But Watford, no wins in. Sorry,
I do have a certain amount of sympathy for them, having written many, many minute by minute reports in my day. It is, you know, you write what you think you've just seen, and then you see a replay, and it's not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've got every sympathy with Sky Sports reporters. I think they're really dealt a hard hand there.
Mm.
But yeah, the Championship.
Watford, no wins in seven.
Yeah, Watford doing pretty poorly. By all accounts, an improved performance in drawing 0-0 at Burnley on Tuesday. But they don't look like likely promotion, like automatic promotion challenges currently. At the moment, Leicester are looking. I've been very impressed by Leicester when I've seen them this season. I think they look a very decent side. Derby won again. They're up to fourth now. Steve McLaren has wrought something of a miracle improvement with them. And they're playing pretty brightly. And Connor Summon was back on the score sheet on Tuesday. So things are looking up at Pride Park.
All right. And who's on the shortlist for the Sheffield Wednesday job?
Well, no less than Neil Warnock, who'd previously suggested that he would be delighted to take the Wednesday job because it would give him a chance to get them relegated.
Did he?
Well, not in the last couple of weeks. He said that previously in his career. Obviously, he managed Sheffield United for a long time. And suddenly Milan Mandarić, who is in charge of Sheffield Wednesday now, he's revealed that Warnock is on a 4 or 5 man shortlist.
Right.
Well, my new best friend, Chris Waddle, who is a former Sheffield Wednesday player and lives in Sheffield, said last night that there is absolutely no chance whatsoever Neil Warnock will get that job.
Right.
And if he did, the next home gate would be approximately 3,000 fans. And his quote was, they'd be the hardcore who probably don't even know Dave Jones has been sacked yet.
Still waiting for your answers, by the way, on that team that hasn't had a top six finish in any division since, well, in the last 40 years. It wasn't Sheffield Wednesday or Sheffield United, clearly.
I haven't a clue.
Are they fictional? Was it Harchester United?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. We're going to take a quick break now because producer Ben's just come up with the answer. Outstanding producer Ben. Outstanding producer Ben. We're going to take a quick break. Then we're back with something very special involving Paolo Bandini. Now, something very special coming up this Saturday as Rail take on Sporting. That's Sporting Kansas City and Rail Salt Lake, of course, in the MLS. It is the MLS final, of course, Barry.
I knew that.
Yeah. Paolo Bandini. You remember him?
Yeah.
Paolo?
Nice fella.
Lovely chat. He's over in America now. And doing
in the Midwest. He's our Midwest correspondent.
I remember how you used to make him stand in the pod.
That's right.
Poor Paolo.
Poor old Paolo.
Didn't even give him a chair.
Nah. So he left. He went and found his own chair.
He's doing very well for himself. He's written a book.
Yeah. And funnily enough, it's all about Casino Jimmy Nielsen, who's captain of Sporting Kansas City, who are in this final here. Anyway, so we thought it'd be a good idea to hear Paolo's thoughts on this final, because he is our MLS correspondent over there for Guardian America, and also about who exactly is Jimmy Nielsen.
Jimmy's a character, to say the least. He's a very entertaining man. He's also got a really interesting, at times harrowing backstory. But he obviously, some people, some of the English listeners will remember from him from his time at Millwall and Leicester. He had two very brief stints in England. Played most of his career in Denmark. Was once upon a time hailed the new Peter Schmeichel, which was a title that somewhat went out of the window when he conceded 4 goals in an under-21 game for Denmark against England. And he wound up having this serviceable but unspectacular career in Denmark, and along the way developed an absolutely ferocious gambling habit, which might also have had some role to play in his failure to become that next Peter Schmeichel as well, because he had a couple of incidents with the national team. He had one with the under-21 team where he stayed out, missed curfew because he was out gambling at a casino, and wound up attracting this nickname Casino Jimmy that followed him around for the rest of his career, basically. But he was a pretty committed gambler. I mean, he was winning at his most, he was winning $500,000 equivalent in a night. At his lowest point, he had built up debt not so far away from that amount. And obviously, we're not talking about someone earning Premier League wages. We're talking about someone who's playing in the Danish league. He pretty much bankrupted his family, and also together with another player on his Danish team, Aalborg, David Nielsen, the two of them, between them, built up such debts with one particular bookie that they ended up effectively driving this bookie out of business. His whole career was sort of defined by that to a certain extent, and then really out of nowhere, he's in his 30s, he's considering retirement, he's playing in the second tier in Denmark with a team where he's not so happy anymore, and this offer from Major League Soccer came along, and as he said, he didn't even know where Kansas City was at the time when he first got this offer, but he's come over here and he's become sort of had a renaissance. He's sort of become the guy that he was supposed to be, I guess, when he was younger. And of course, it's a slightly different league and different expectations. But he has become a good goalkeeper in his 30s, and he's enjoyed this time with Kansas City very greatly now.
So Jimmy Nielsen's the captain of Sporting Kansas City, and they're taking on Real Salt Lake. And it's fair to say that this isn't the glitziest final that we've had in recent years. There's no Beckham, no Henry, no Deuce Dempsey, no Robbie Keane even. But tell us about these two sides.
Yeah, I mean, that's a genuine discussion that's going on in America right now, or certainly in the community that follows Major League Soccer, is this good for the league that you have two small market teams, Kansas City and Salt Lake? They're not big, you know, they're not Los Angeles, they're not New York, and they're not teams that have those players, as you say, like Henry and Beckham, who are going to win you that neutral audience of casual ESPN fans who don't know a lot about soccer and who want to come along and be interested in it. On the flip side of it, these are two of the most fascinating teams in Major League Soccer, because they're teams that have built something really organic, that have found fan bases that are absolutely furiously committed. I think, you know, the fan base in Kansas City is probably one of the most raucous in the entire league, behind two obvious ones in Seattle and Portland. And they've both built these very sustainable models with big youth setups involving thousands of kids in the local area. They both built their own stadiums. They're kind of the model of sustainability and what Major League Soccer can be without relying on those designated players and those international stars, I suppose. And it's a sort of interesting question for Major League Soccer. Do you want the story that's going to pull in your average American fan who doesn't necessarily care about soccer and knows who David Beckham is, or do you want something that's perhaps more healthy for the long term of the league to have teams like this doing well? And I think the answer is you want both, and I think that's why it's a good thing to have this, and it's a good thing to have LA in the final last year. But it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in terms of things like TV viewing figures, and whether or not, as I say, your neutral fan who doesn't have a natural reason to pull from these two teams is going to switch on the TV on Saturday.
And how do you see the game going then?
It'll be an interesting matchup. These two teams don't like each other. They've had a really feisty, would be the gentle way of putting it, game earlier this season. There's a slightly disputed rivalry. Some people aren't sure whether it deserves that title or not, but certainly an animosity between these two teams going back a couple of years to a preseason game where they wound up having a huge brawl. It's going to be a passionate game from that regard, and it's also a clash of styles to a certain extent. Real Salt Lake general manager Garth Lagerwey has tried to sell this in the past as a sort of clash of his beautiful team that likes to play football against Sporting Kansas City, who are just there to pick you in the air and be physical. And there's a grain of truth to that for sure, but I think it's also interesting that Kansas City this year have tried to diversify their style a little bit. They actually play a possession and pressing game that you'd probably say is loosely modeled on the idea, not to the same success level. I'm not trying to mislead you, but the idea of what Barcelona want to do with a 4-3-3 and pressing opponents and really just retaining the ball to frustrate opponents a lot of the time as well and create their chances from there. Unfortunately, they lack the flair up front. They lack the goal scorers, and they have more creativity perhaps with guys like Benny Feilheiber and Graham Zusi than they do finishers. And Salt Lake is perhaps slightly different there. They're a team who are a bit more creative. They play this diamond midfield with Javier Morales at the top of it, and he's a really fun player to watch, an extremely creative player. But in the end, they're both two teams that value possession and want to hold on to the ball. So I think that the biggest part of this game is going to be which of those two teams is capable of retaining possession, because they both want it.
Right, well, If that's piqued your interest, you'll be delighted to know that there's a link to Paolo's book about Casino Jimmy Nielsen on the Guardian Football Weekly page. And he'll be doing minute by minute with Paolo on the final between Sporting and Real, which will also be live. You can watch it and have the minute by minute playing. It'll be live on BT Sport 2. Just to finish off then, let's talk a little bit about the crazy world of European football. Rafa, Germany, nothing to say there, really. It was just your German Cup.
What do you mean? German Cup is big. It's huge tradition.
Yeah.
Thick, anything golden, interesting happen? Shiny things.
Anything interesting happen?
Well, most interesting thing was probably in the context of the whole season was Schalke getting knocked out at home by TSG Hoffenheim, which really will increase the pressure on Jens Keller. He's got two key games coming up against Gladbach in the league, and then the big one against Basel in the Champions League, where I have to win to go through. And I don't think he's going to see out the winter break. Personally.
Really? No. Any saucy transfer rumours for us?
Not really. No, I mean, there is a presumption that if you have to do transfers in the winter, then you got the summer badly wrong. People are almost averse to doing any business then.
Right.
It's
okay.
A German thing.
Mm. It's all very disappointing so far. Let's move on to France then, where PSG.
In crisis.
How about this? And it's back on. It's back on in France, where PSG's 36-game unbeaten run came to an end when they got defeated 2-0 by Evian. Well, Evian.
What a result that was for Evian.
Hey. Oh. Thanks, Barry.
That felt a bit flat, Barry. For me. That one.
Yeah.
Surprised now, you had the bottle to make it.
Yeah, is that it? Okay. And that means, because Lille beat Olympique Marseille. So they're now just 1 point behind PSG at the top. And Monaco, who won 3-0 down the road from Monte Carlo at Nice, are only 2 points off the top. So it's really looking tight. The other interesting thing about Lille's victory was it meant that it's now 11 clean sheets for their goalkeeper, whatever his name might be, Rafa. I saw your cheeky little tweet. I saw it. Duly noted. Yeah, his name's Vincent Enyema. Well, it's not Vincent because he's Nigerian. It's Vincent Enyema. Right. They call him Vincent in France.
They call him Victor.
They call him Victor in Stratford. All right.
Vincent sounds like a cut price French version of American rapper 50 Cent.
Vincent. Very nice. Very nice. Hey. Tell you what, Barry, don't worry. We are going to finish off with a little bit of a word on what's happening in Italy, because there were two absolutely terrific games there on Monday. I don't know if you were able to catch any of these in your busy life.
I'm aware of the scores. Napoli beat somebody
4-3.
2. 2, and somebody else beat somebody else 4-3.
Bingo. All right, that's it for today's pod. Yeah. All right, no, yeah, it was a huge game in Rome as Napoli pull back to 3 behind Roma with a 4-2 win away at Lazio, with Higuain scoring from open play for the first time in how long now? Since 22nd of September, so months and months and months, and Lazio in all sorts of problems. The fans were on the warpath. The players had to do that rather unpleasant thing where they had to go and stand on the Curva Nord and bow their heads and listen to the insults of the ultras. And Pandev, who scored one of the Napoli goals, famously had this court case against the Lazio owner where he basically took him to court for what the Italians call mobbing. Did you call that mobbing here as well? It's basically kind of industrial bullying. Lotito, who's the owner of Lazio, tried to get him to reduce his contract, and when he wouldn't accept it, he effectively froze him out of the team, sent him to go and train on his own, etc. So Pandev got him, took him to court, won the case, got a free transfer away to Inter, and then moved on to Napoli, and has done very well out of it all. But he was... after he scored, he was very visibly, as the Italians would say, sending Lotito to that country, which is a polite way of saying, telling him to F off. Anyway, and the other thing about Lazio is their manager appears to have just agreed to become the Swiss coach, which is throwing their season somewhat into confusion. Anyway, that's all very interesting. Fiorentina, meanwhile, were the team who beat the other team 4-3, the other team being Verona, under the watching eyes of Gabriel Batistuta, was back in... back at the Artemio Franchi Stadium, and there was much love for him. They were all singing all the Batigol songs. And Borja Valero looking amazing in that Fiorentina game. Anyway, that's super stuff. Could mention Juve in their current woes.
No.
Should we just... Yeah, go on, let's mention problems for Juve. They're top of the table, 3 points clear, but big problems. One, Pirlo is out. He's going to miss the next 40 days with ligament damage to his right knee. That's the Galatasaray Champions League clash. which is crucial, and quite possibly might not be back for their head-to-head with second in the table Roma. That's on the 6th of January. Raphael, you're looking like you've forgotten something you wanted to mention.
Well, just as you were talking about Pirlo's knee injury, I remembered that the biggest news, although some people might say it's not a big surprise, is that Arjen Robben is injured again.
No, from his knee slide.
But he got kicked on the knee very badly in what could also be deemed a freak accident because the whistle had already gone for offside. But he played on, keeper played on, caught him square on the knee. It was an open wound down to the bone at Bayern Munich. Twitter people said... And he's out for 6 weeks, which isn't that strange, but is somewhat ironic because only a few days ago Pep Guardiola said, well, he's playing really well, he hasn't been injured yet.
Mm-hmm. He's the Ian McIntosh of the Bundesliga, Pep Guardiola. Tell me something, so that is 6 weeks he's out. Luckily they got a winter break anyway.
Yeah, so it's effectively 3 weeks.
3 weeks he's going to be out. Now, how much is that going to impact on Bayern and their four-point lead at the top of the table?
Not that much, you should think. I mean, domestically the games are all very winnable. The one key game left is really the Man City game at home, but because Bayern won the first leg 3-1, or the first game, I should say, they can even afford a heavy defeat at home. A 2-0 would still be enough to finish top. So you'd think they can do without Arjen Robben.
All right. Super stuff. Well, that was far more interesting than what I was going to say, which is all about Juve and Foulmouth Kids. I'll save that for the pay-per-view, which will be up late Thursday, early Friday. And hey, Barry, you got a letter.
Yeah, well, a letter came into the office attached to a giant Jaffa cake.
Yeah.
It's for you. Dear James, on Tuesday morning, I received the following text from my friend Alex.
Right.
And in quote, had a dream last night when you sent James Richardson a giant Jaffa cake and got a shout out on Football Weekly. Make it so. Therefore, please accept this cake and make it, in a very real sense, our dream come true.
Right, you see the letter, Barry.
Kind regards, Grable Frog.
Right, I don't see the cake.
Yeah, the cake was eaten yesterday in the office. Not by me, I hasten to add. I've already grassed up the lady in question who took it out of the box, carved it up and distributed it among our colleagues. I did not touch it.
I have to say, I think that's...
Times are tough at the Guardian.
That's poor form. Wow. So all that business about having your cake and eating it, it's... Couldn't be more wrong.
Well, you got a nice letter that I've since doodled on.
I'm not even sure if we should do that. That guy's just trying to buy a mention with a Jaffa cake. A cake Jaffa cake. I'm not sure if that's a terrible precedent. I don't think
imagine if we got people sending all sorts of nice things into the Guardian office all the time.
It's not going to happen, Simon.
Anything you do send in, keep it below 50
£50.
Quid. We're not allowed to accept inducements.
We've all done bribery training recently. That's something we take very seriously as an organisation. Specifically, we're not allowed to accept anything over £50 in
public. Has anyone ever tried to bribe you, Simon, with a Riesling, perhaps?
People would know not to bother.
Can I take this opportunity to stress to everyone listening that I'm not an employee of The Guardian and work under no such restrictions?
Has anyone tried to bribe you, Ian or Rafa?
No.
No? Rafa?
Not overtly, but, you know, you get invited on these junkets and trips and et cetera.
Is that what they're for? Barry? I just thought they were being nice.
Good. All right. That's it for today, and we'll be back on Monday with, you know, more of same. So have a super time. Football's great. Loving your work, Simon Burton, Ian McIntosh, Raphael Honigstein, Barry Glendening, and producer Ben. Oh! One last thing, he said. Best fashion halfway through the door. Columbo style. That team who hasn't enjoyed a top six finish. Anybody? Anybody? Producer Ben knows it was Coventry City. Coventry City. All right then, listeners. Super stuff. And we'll speak to you on Monday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.